My name is Liz Cooney, and I'm really thrilled to be with all of you today. I had no intention of jumping the order of things, so I promise I'm not a diva that says, come on, let's get moving. So I'm really excited to be here. I work for a company called Tarot International, and we do interpersonal skills and communication training. But more importantly, I have several personal connections to IRIS, and I know what an amazing organization IAAIS is. So my grandmother was an IRIS listener. She had macular degeneration, and I know just how important her radio was to her in her late years. And I also had the opportunity a few years ago to actually work for IRIS. And I got to do some of the behind the scenes work in operations and work very closely with Mary Frances. So I understand a little bit about what you all do every day, day in and day out. And I know what a vital organization and association that this is. Because after I worked for IRIS, I left to work for Tarot, but then I became a board member. And from that perspective, really be able to understand the nuts and bolts of what's going on a bigger picture. And these last 2 years have been incredibly challenging, I know, for each and every one of you. And working with Mary Frances through that, being able to see not only the changes day to day, but minute to minute, especially in those early times. I applaud each and every one of you for what you do all day and the commitment that you have to your organizations, because you are an essential service to the people who listen and who rely on you for their information. And so I just want to start by saying thank you. Thank you for what you do for your organizations, your volunteers, and the support you give to your community.
You're welcome.
I am going to spend the next 40-ish minutes or so talking a little bit about the skills that you already have. We focus at Tarot on interpersonal skills. We've been around for almost 30 years, and a lot of people used to call them the soft skills, but what we focus on is the research behind these important skills. So instead of soft skills, I like to think of them as essential skills. It's something that we do without thinking, and yet when we spend the time to pause, reflect, and be a little bit more intentional about how we're communicating, all of a sudden things can change. And most specifically, we're going to focus on this idea of influence, how we influence outcomes. Think about in your daily life how many decisions you have to make, how many people you have to interact with, how many problems you have to solve on a regular basis. Most of us tend to go to one of three approaches in those scenarios. We usually try to either fight those situations, so we might get kind of competitive, it's my way or the highway, this is what we need to do, this is what needs to happen. Or we might do the opposite. We might be more passive and accommodating. You know what, you just decide, doesn't matter to me, and kind of give in. But usually we all try to come to some sort of compromise where we give a little and we get a little. And we try to resolve conflict, we try to come to decisions through a win-win situation. We have found through several different studies that there's actually a better way than just compromise.
I know, can you believe it?
And so that's what I want to share with you throughout this time, but this is most relevant to you when it matters. And so I want you to think about the different decisions and problems that you're faced with regularly. And as we go, I'm going to challenge you with three specific things. The first thing is I'm going to challenge how we think about influence. The second one is how we think about conflict. And the third thing is I'm going to challenge each and every one of you to reflect on your natural habits, and maybe there's something that you want to adjust. So consider doing a self audit as we go through these and reflect on some of the recent situations that you've found yourself in where some of these behaviors might apply. So the first challenge. Think about the most important person in your life. Right now, who is that most important person? Could be a partner, a spouse, a child, a parent. Hold that person in your mind. Think about them. I'm going to ask you a question about your relationship with this person. Who's winning? Now, hopefully you find the question to be absurd. Hopefully you're thinking, well, we both are. It's a loving relationship. We both care about each other. We have respect for one another. We're both winning. All right, now, slightly different question. Think about the other relationships in your life. People you work with. Volunteers who serve you. Board members. Donors. Other folks you have to engage with. Maybe you don't have as much of a loving relationship with them as you do with that first person you had in mind. If I asked you the question of who's winning in that relationship, what would your answer be? And if it's anything besides we both are, again, you've lost the plot of good relationships. So I want you to challenge yourself and think about if you could, in every interaction, imagine that there's no loser, there's always the winners. You both are winning the entire time. And with that mindset, it is going to change the way that you communicate with that person. It's going to change the way that you interact. And it's also going to change the outcomes of whatever problem you're trying to solve or decision you're trying to make. Now, the second thing I wanted to challenge you on is conflict. How do you think about conflict? I'm going to say something that might be a little bit provocative, and that is most conflict can be prevented. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, it depends on the situation, but maybe. Most conflict can be prevented. So we view conflict through an interpersonal skills lens, and by that I mean it's usually an interaction that went wrong in some form or fashion. And it typically involves a lot of unproductive emotions. So I'm going to share with you how we can actually prevent conflict through this interaction, through these relationships that you are faced with. So to do that, I'm going to share with you a model of how people influence and the behaviors and outcomes when we are interacting with other people. So on the slide here, you can see just a general XY axis model that we've tilted on its side. And on one side, we've got the focus on yourself, so your own interests, needs, values, and desires. And then on the other side, we've got the needs and interests of the other person, or the other party. So it could be a group of people. Now the 0 to 10 scale represents if you have a 10 on your side, all of your needs and interests are being met. Same goes with the other side. The further down we get, maybe not all of your needs and interests are being met, and maybe not all of the other parties. So I'm going to share with you those five different approaches. And again, this is most relevant to you if it really reflects your real life. So think right now of a decision you're trying to make or a problem you're trying to solve. Could be personal or professional. We are here to talk about work, but we know these skills apply in your personal life as well. So maybe you are deciding to buy a car. Maybe you are working on budgets. Maybe you're trying to purchase a new technology. Think of a decision that you are faced with right now where there is another person involved in that process. All right, hold that in your mind. We're going to take a look at these typical behaviors. The first one is an avoidance behavior. We use avoidance when we're trying to not engage, we don't like confrontation. And at best, we are delaying the situation. Maybe there's unproductive emotions, we need to step away. But at worst, it's a lose-lose. So your needs are not being met, but neither is the other party's. So not the most effective, but there's always a time and place. We'll get to that. The next approach is accommodation. So this is when you're focused more on the needs and interests of the other person than you are on yourself. And with this approach, we tend to give in, we tend to give up.
Can we explain the graphic just a little bit, what we're seeing?
Absolutely, yes.
Want me to, you want to?
Yeah, so in the lower quadrant of 0 to 4-ish, we've got a gray square that has lose-lose on it. And that represents that avoidance approach. So if you were to plot a data point on there, put a dot on there, those are when you're not really getting any needs met on either side. If we were to plot a dot way up on 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of the other person's needs or interests, we've got a big red square up there. And that is where we've got this accommodation approach. And that's where your interests are not being met, so we consider that a lose situation. But the other parties are being met, and so that's a win for them. And we'll talk about when those things are appropriate, or that approach is appropriate. And if you think about the sort of fight or flight mode that many of us go into when we're faced with confrontation, this accommodation approach would be considered the flight mode, where we're just sort of taking a step back, we don't want to engage, and we're letting that other person meet their needs first. On the other side of this model, so if we plot a data point on 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10 of our interests being met, now we've got another red square on the right-hand side of this model where our needs are really being fulfilled. Our interests are being fulfilled, but it's at the expense of the other person. And so we consider this approach to be competition. We win, they lose. Again, there's time and a place for this. And many of us will have a default approach in all of these. We usually tend to do one more than the other. But this is also related to a lot of the analogies we use in the workplace related to competition and sports. And sports analogies are certainly appropriate. However, what we often forget is after the game is over, after the competition is done, a good sportsman will be collaborative, and they will be able to engage in a way that sets the meet aside or the game aside. Whether they won or lost, or lost, then they're able to still have that dynamic of collaboration. So on the fight or flight mode, this would be the fight mode, where folks are really just competitive and really focusing on their needs. Now this one in the middle, so we've got kind of an even spread of maybe a 6 and a 6 on both your needs and the other person's needs. That puts us towards the center and the upper half of this model, which gives us a green sort of diamond shape. And this is a win-win, and it's that compromise that I mentioned earlier. But we call this a lowercase win-win in how we type it out. It's not as a complete win-win, because think about it. Yes, you're getting something that you want, but you're also getting something you don't want. So think of that situation you have in your mind. What would be a compromise outcome of that decision or problem you're trying to solve? And you might be able to live with that, but is it really the best? And are there things that you're not able to gain in that process? So I mentioned that there is a different way. There is a better way that we're going to add to the top of this model, and that is where we're able to have the needs of ourselves be met and the needs of the other person be met, and we're not risking the relationship, nor are we risking the results. So we call this a capital win-win, and this is that collaboration, where I'm able to be assertive on what I need to accomplish, or maybe it's on behalf of my organization that I need this decision to be made a certain way, but I'm also honoring and respecting that other party and that other person's interests.
Now, this is easier said than done, and it does require a lot of skills that all of you already have. And you're doing a lot of these things already, but wouldn't it be great if you could be intentional in every interaction to apply which behavioral approach is most appropriate? So let's think about these. Back to avoidance. If you are in an interaction with somebody and emotions are high, avoidance might be a great strategy to use, where you say maybe to a staff member or volunteer, hey, you know what? We're both really emotional right now. Or this is a tense situation. Let's take a pause. Let's take a recess. Let's come back to it. Maybe in an hour, maybe the next day. Completely appropriate. It's also an appropriate behavior if you're just not invested. Maybe the issue isn't important to you or the other person. All right, avoid it, move on. Back to the accommodation, where we're focusing more on the other person's needs. Again, if you're not as invested in this issue, go ahead and let them have their way and it's no loss to you. That might be an appropriate time. Also, if you realize that you were in the wrong, you might need to give in, you might need to accommodate to somebody else's interests. Competition. There's certainly a time and a place for competition where we're focusing on our self-interests first and foremost. How many of you have to enforce rules that are not enjoyable? Compliance, policy, regulations.
Parenting.
Yeah. These things happen, and sometimes you just have to be assertive, and the competition approach is the best behavior in those situations. And compromise, there's a time and place for that as well. When, again, you're moderately engaged or invested in the outcome, you want to have that compromise, but it's not as important to you. You can give in a few, let those things slide. Collaboration, we would say, is the best approach. However, it takes a lot of time and energy. So it is an investment, and we're thinking about the long-term impact. So some of these other approaches are appropriate when it's short-term, immediate needs. But when we start thinking about the long-term effect, we want to strive and invest in the collaborative approach. So how do we do this? Well, first, self-awareness is key. So if you were to look at these strategies or think about this model as I've described it, where would you put yourself as your go-to strategy, your go-to behavior when you're in an interaction with somebody? Because we will have sort of a comfort zone of a behavior that makes sense to us, and we'll have one that we kind of aspire to as well. So to help you with this, we actually have an assessment that I'm going to introduce to you. It's something that's available on your own time. The website is tero.com/influence-keynote, all one word, keynote. So tero.com/influence-keynote. On this webpage, you'll have a bunch of resources for this particular presentation and this topic, and specifically there's a assessment that you can download, you can fill it out, and it will tell you which of those five behaviors is your go-to, is your tendency. And it'll also tell you your second one.
I don't want to know.
So we have one when we're at our best. We have one when we're at our best. Usually it's compromise or collaboration. And then when we're at our worst, so those times when we're stressed, when we haven't had enough sleep, when we need a Snickers bar, and that's important for us to know about too. Because if we're aware of it, we know how to adjust, we know how to maybe be proactive. So you want to take a look at that at some point. But how do we do this? How do we get to a collaborative approach in our interactions, and especially in our personal lives? Because when those emotions are more, when they're stronger, when the outcome seems more important, then it really does matter how we approach it. So I'm going to share with you the four steps to win-win. This research comes from the Harvard Negotiations Project. Now you might think negotiations, I don't do that sort of thing. It's just another word for influence, right? We are trying to influence the outcome of an interaction with somebody. So let's go through these four steps just briefly, and then I'll go into them a little bit more detail. The first step is separating the person from the problem. So honoring the relationship, but not at the expense of the results. So we're getting clarity on what the issue is, and I'm still respecting the individual in front of me. The second thing is identifying underlying interests. So do we have an understanding of what the problem is and why? Why do we have different perspectives, different opinions, different needs and interests? The third step is to generate options. So solutions, ideas, that comes in step three. And step four is to use outside criteria to evaluate those options and come to a decision. This also probably seems like common sense. But here's the challenge. As human beings, we are wired to be problem solvers. It is our default to go first to step three. So when somebody comes to you with a problem or an issue, what do?
Throw it out, answers.
Yeah, answers. Yeah. Let's fix it. Let's solve it. Here's an idea. Have you tried this? Well, where'd you do this? So we start trying to come up with options. Spoiler alert, that's a recipe for conflict. This is effective in reaching a collaboration, a win-win outcome, but only if we do all of these steps, and only if we do them in the exact order that they're laid out. So I'm going to go through each of these in a little bit more detail and give you some examples of how this really manifests in our regular life. Step one, this is where we are separating that person from the problem. So we're building and preserving the relationship. If we do this step, we usually rush through it. And I'm not talking about small talk, niceties, politeness. That's important, but what we're really getting at is, can we separate these things in a way that maintains a relationship for the long term? Because a lot of the situations you're trying to influence, it's with people you have ongoing relationships with. So I'm not talking about the people that you know, the barista that you bought your coffee from this morning. I'm talking about your family members, your staff, community members that you are regularly interacting with. So what we want to challenge you to think about this first step is, rather than going at it towards each other, of getting in conflict and disagreeing, think about it as you're both sitting on the same side of the table and you're attacking the problem together. So the problem's on the other side of the table, but you two are sitting next to each other. How many of you are parents? Okay, several of you. We do this as parents, naturally. If your toddler is throwing a tantrum, if your teenager is talking back, we don't sit there and say, ugh, why did we get this kid? Okay, maybe some of you. But very quickly, we don't hate the kid. We hate the behavior. We don't like the behavior. And so we coach, train, guide our little people to change their behavior. And that's the problem that we are attacking, not the individual and their existence and who they are at their core, it's the behavior. So how do we do this in a professional setting? How do we do this when maybe we don't respect the other person? Do you ever just get that phone call, you see the caller ID, and just seeing that person's name? Why me? Why do I have to deal with this person today? Or maybe it's an email. We are able
to still apply this in those situations. Have you ever called a 1-800 number, customer service line, and you are the irate customer upset because of your product or your service is not what you need it to be? Yeah, we've all done that. And are you met with somebody who's aggressive back to you? More and more we are, actually. But if we have a positive situation or a positive interaction, that customer service person is addressing us in a calm way. They're listening to us, they're letting us vent our frustration, and then they're attacking the problem. They're trying to solve that problem. So they don't necessarily attack us back. There are several studies out there related to the kind of number one reason why doctors are sued for malpractice. Any guesses as to what that is? Yeah, bedside manners is what we used to call it. They have a term for it now in the social sciences, which is likability. So said another way, people who like their doctor, even if there is malpractice, are less likely to sue that doctor because they like them. And on the reverse, if something happens to them, and even if it's minor, if they don't like their doctor, they are more likely to sue them. Now, I think one of the best examples of step number one, people who can separate the person from the problem the best, the experts in this, are hostage negotiators. Think about that for a second. You have somebody who's entering a very tense situation. I guarantee you they don't have a lot of respect for the other person. And when they're entering that moment, they're not thinking about the respect and how they want to care for that other person. They need to get the hostage, the victims, out as soon as possible. So what do? Most of you have seen this on TV.
Create a relationship.
Yeah.
Call her by her first name.
Yeah. What's your name? Yeah. Can I get you a cup of coffee? Do you need a sandwich? They don't say, what are you doing? Are you out of your mind? They build that relationship, and they de-escalate it, and they humanize that individual. Now, hopefully, none of you are at that level of a high-stakes situation in your daily life, but it's a good lesson for us to think about, we can do this. We actually already are doing it, but when our emotions rise, we might need to step back and remind ourselves, it's not the individual that is the problem. It's the issue. It's the behavior. It's the decision, whatever the case may be. So let's look at step two. We've talked about the person now. We're going to talk about the problem. This is where we focus on underlying interests. Now you see a picture of an orange on this screen. And the orange represents a story that came out of this Harvard negotiations project. So there was a restaurant that had two chefs, and they were fighting over the last orange in the kitchen. And what did the manager do? Grabbed the orange, cut it in half, gave both halves to each of the chefs. What happened next was fascinating. So one chef took the peel off and used the fruit and threw it in a pot and was going to make a sauce with the fruit. The other chef took the fruit, threw it away, used the peel, and started zesting it for a cake that she was making. So what happened? What could have been? Yes, Mary Frances.
One could have had the whole orange fruit, and the other could have had the whole orange zest.
Exactly. Thank you.
Right.
But that didn't happen. That didn't happen, right? And this is why. So the position, somebody's position on an issue, this is what you want. So both chefs wanted the orange. The interests, though, the interest is, why do you want it? One simple question from the manager could have resolved the issue in a much more effective way. Why do you want the orange? Why do you need the orange? And so this is why most of us do find compromise is the best situation. And those of you, again, with little kids around, we do this in our lives. Last slice of cake left. What do? Have one person cut it, the other person chooses. But this happens on things that aren't as easily resolved. And our challenge, again, is to get beyond compromise to more of a collaborative approach. So another example of this. So there's a case study of two sisters back east, two women whose mother recently died. And they were fighting over their mother's diamond ring. Now, you might think, okay, a compromise would be, can't cut it in half. What if we sold it and used the money to do something? That would be a compromise. But would that be as satisfactory to both of the sisters? Probably not. I'm going to come back to that story, but think about how we could maybe go beyond that compromise. Before we do, let's dig a little bit more into this interests. So on the slide is a picture of an iceberg. And this iceberg is representing an analogy for this notion of positions versus interests. Positions, again, are what we want. So those are the surface level things that we can often see in somebody or that we hear from somebody else. So in the case of the two sisters, they're arguing, well, I should get mom's ring because I'm the oldest. Well, I should get mom's ring because I helped her in her later years with her health problems. And so back and forth, point and counterpoint. And so we've got these positions. It's obvious where the two sisters stand. But what we don't know are these underlying interests. So below the surface, and in the iceberg analogy, below the water, these are the reasons why. And there are hundreds of reasons why. On the screen, we can see words like people's communication style, their background, maybe their cultural difference, their own beliefs, their desires. These are hard things to know about another person, almost impossible. Some of us don't even know these things about ourselves when we're in that moment. And yet, if we can uncover them, if we can learn what's driving somebody's position, we're going to be able to have a different conversation. If I'm trying to change your mind, I need to know what's on your mind. And in order to do that, we need to talk about why. Why do you want this? So I'm going to give you a shortcut, because there's generally four types of underlying interests that all of us have in any interaction. And they are short-term interests, long-term interests, tangible interests, and intangible interests. A lot of times we find ourselves getting into debates because we're focused on the short term and the tangible. I want the ring. I want the diamond ring. I want it because I want it. It's mom's. I deserve it. So that's short term and it's tangible. It's an actual object. However, if we can start looking at these other interests, long term and especially intangible, then we might change the outcome. So with this diamond ring case study, the two sisters came together and the mediator asked them, why do you want the diamond ring? What are your interests in having this ring? Well, they both said that they want to honor the memory of their mother. They want something to symbolize the relationship of their mother. That's common ground. It's also intangible. The relationship that they had with their mother, that can't be measured. It can't be touched. The object itself is tangible. Now, one sister said, I want the ring because I want to wear it. I want to wear the ring itself, and that will remind me of my relationship with mom. The other sister said, well, I want the stone. I want the diamond stone so I can set it in a necklace and wear that every day. as a symbolic gesture to the love I have for my mom. All of a sudden, there's a different solution. And so that's what they did. They were able to, the sister who wanted the gem took it out of the diamond ring, put the diamond in a necklace, replaced the stone with the other sister's birthstone, and then that sister got to wear the ring. So you can see when we start to dig into the why, these underlying reasons, why somebody has an interest, we're able to come up with actually more solutions. Now, I've been talking mostly about steps one and two, separating people from the problem and identifying those underlying interests. Does that mean steps three and four aren't important? No. But it does mean that we do those a little bit more naturally. So step three is that generating options. What's interesting to know is when we take the time to do steps one and two, on average, we have two times as many options. Two times as many options because we know what the interests are. We know what the problem actually is under the surface. Then we're going to move to step four, where we analyze those options. And we do that using criteria that both individuals or both parties understand to be fair. So these are two separate steps. Every time you come up with an option or idea, you are not judging it, you're not criticizing it. Anything goes, put it on the table, generate as many options, as wild as they might be. And then we move to judging those items. We judge those options based on criteria. So again, if you're going to maybe purchase a car in the near future, outside criteria might be budget, might be Kelley Blue Book information. If both parties agree that that criteria is a fair way to assess the option, then you're going to have a win-win outcome. So we've talked about the five kind of behaviors that we tend to do in negotiation or influencing a scenario, and we've looked at these four steps for how to get to that collaboration, get to that win-win outcome. I want to leave you with just a few other skills that you already have in your toolbox of interpersonal communication. And this will assist you in the process of influencing those interactions. So the first one is this art of asking questions. On the slide, we see a group of seniors that are on a patio and they're chatting. And if you imagine the conversations that you have with the people in your life, we often use tell statements when we're trying to influence the other person. A tell statement is simply telling you where I stand, I'm telling you my position, I'm telling you what I want. But when I do that, I'm more likely to get a defensive reaction from you, and you are also maybe not wanting to engage. So we can get into that counterpoint or point counterpoint, or we might not get any further than that at all. When I ask questions, I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to get to those underlying interests. So open-ended questions like, can you tell me more about what concerns you in this situation? Or what are the things that are really driving your position? Fill me in. When we ask those questions, we're able to get to those underlying reasons. Of course, once we ask a question, we have to listen. And a lot of us consider ourselves to be great listeners. However, we're pretty good at listening to respond and not listening to understand. So I want you to do something. Take a pen and a piece of paper, or you can do this just in your mind, and think about the great listeners in your life. The absolute best listeners in your life. Write down those names or think of those individuals. Okay, just take a moment to do that.
How many of you can think of one? All right, keep your hand raised if you can think of two. Keep your hand raised if you can think of three people. Can you think of four? Okay, more hands are down. Can you think of five people? Keep your hands up. Can you think of six people? All right, so five people was the top. So five is the top. That's pretty high. I think the most I ever had in an audience was seven people. Many of us have two to three. That's the average. Now, we typically know around 250 people in our lives on a first name basis. They say this is the amount of people that might attend your wedding or your funeral. 250 people. And yet, two to three, a couple of you, five, can name the great listeners out of that 250. Wow. That means that we ourselves are probably not the best listeners either. But what would it mean if the people who look to you for guidance, for leadership, for decisions in your organizations or personally, what would it mean if your name was on their list? If we did this exercise and they wrote down your name, what would that mean? Think about that. Reflect on these feelings and the people that you have written down on this list. Because these things don't come naturally. We are more likely to respond with what we want to say rather than following up with more questions to understand what somebody else is saying. Which leads us to overall how we communicate. So on the slide, there's a pie chart. And this research comes out of UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles, in the 1960s, but it's been replicated ever since by Dr. Albert Mehrabian. And what this pie chart represents is our impact when we are communicating with somebody. Now, for a sighted audience, 55% of our impact comes from our visual communication. In other words, our facial expression, our gestures, our body language, our eye contact, 55% of it. 38% comes from our vocal quality, our tone and pitch, our volume, so how our voice sounds when we're communicating. So what does that mean 7%, the remaining 7% is? The actual words, the content. If we don't have the visual, then the vocal quality goes up to 87%. 87% of the impact we have comes from how we are saying it, and then 13% comes from the words. When you're about to enter a tough conversation, how many of you are thinking about the way your voice sounds? How many of you are in the mirror looking at yourself or imagining how you're going to fold your arms or not fold your arms? We don't. We think about the words. But what this research tells us is we have to think about all those nonverbals and how our voice sounds when we are saying it, especially when there's emotions.
These past couple of years have been so challenging to this very model. And I would even venture to say might be part of why we seem much less patient with one another. A lot more, you know, like the road rage, the initial, like, not getting my way sort of reaction.
Right, right.
So how do we quickly get back to that? I'm in the world of wanting in-person communication, and it's tough right now because people are still standing away from wanting. They want to work from home. They want to keep their distance.
I wish I had a magic wand.
I'm just bringing that up.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that question.
Could you paraphrase that into the mic?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. The question that was asked was, things recently in the last couple of years have made this really challenging. When we are working remotely or virtually, we don't have the luxury of all of these nonverbal aspects of our communication. And so with that, people are quicker to anger, quicker to disagree. So how do we navigate this? Again, I wish I had a magic wand for you. I wish that there was a simple answer. But what we can control is what we give. We cannot control what we get. And so I remind you what step one is. Separate that person from the problem. And I also encourage you to think about your interactions with intention. Sometimes we do have to pause, take a step back, take a deep breath. Imagine what somebody's underlying interests are. If we don't know or we don't have the opportunity to ask them, what could they be? And how could that be maybe driving their emotions, driving their behavior? And if you do have the opportunity to ask them and have the conversation, we're looking at the long term. A year from now, 2 years now, 2 years from now, you want that trust and rapport to still be there with those people. So how you interact every single time matters. But again, you can only control what you give. You cannot control what you get or what you receive. Now the final skill I'm going to leave you with is this idea of common ground. Many of us skip over this. We don't think to mention it when we're having a conversation with somebody. But when we're asking questions and we're listening to understand, and we're thinking about what are those interests that I have in common with you, if we can name them, if we can speak them out loud, then we're more likely to come to a win-win or a collaborative solution. Because if I disagree with you on maybe 2 points, guess what? We're just gonna keep focusing on those 2 points over and over again, back and forth. But if I can think of 6 other points that we have in common, shared ground, then all of a sudden we have 8 different points that we're talking about, and only 2 of them we disagree with. Now that doesn't seem as of an intense situation than just focusing on those 2. But it does require listening. Oh, you know, we both want a balanced budget. It's important to both of us that we have flexibility in our work schedules. So can you name those? Can you pull them from what the other person is giving you and give it back to them and establish that common ground? Now, all of these things that I've talked about, the influence model where we have 5 different behaviors, approaches, and the 4 steps to getting to that collaborative approach, these are things that don't come easy. And on the slide here now, we have an arrow that's pointing straight up with a dotted line towards the top. Below that dotted line is the word unconscious. And above the line is conscious. Research says that we operate our daily lives around 85% unconscious. And these are your waking hours. Think about that. How many of you have driven home from work and you're in the driveway and you don't remember how you got there? If you don't believe me, go ahead, the next time you're in your office, move the wastebasket to the other side of your desk and tell me how long it takes you to stop throwing garbage on the floor. We operate out of habit, and everything I've discussed today, you're already doing in some form of habit. So if that means you want to aspire to listen more, listen differently, take a step back and separate somebody personally from the issue, it means it's going to take a conscious effort. But I'm here to tell you that we do this at Tarot internally as an organization. We practice it, we study it, we teach it, and it does become a new habit. But sometimes we have to remind ourselves. We're in the middle of a team meeting, and people are throwing out ideas, and we have to say, whoa, 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 whoa. I think we're in step 3. Let's go back. What are our interests here? What are we really trying to solve? But I'm not going to leave you hanging completely. We do have resources for you. So again, that website, tarot.com/influence-keynote. On that webpage, there's more articles and videos on this topic. There's the assessment that you can download and take. We have weekly videos that we put out on these skills. And then we have a monthly newsletter called The Three, where if you want to explore this on a different format, you can get that in your inbox as well. Now before I go, I do have, you see on the slide here, it's a picture of a book called Your Invisible Toolbox. I have copies of this book. It's written by our president and founder, Rowena Crosby.
She's so cool.
She's pretty great. And our vice president, Deborah Renner. And we are going to give these to you, and all I ask is that you spread the word of either something that you learned today, share it with a friend, share it with a colleague, and if you finish the book, share it with a friend, share it with a colleague. This book shares about 100 tips on these interpersonal skills. Now, if you don't need a hard copy, it is available on Audible. And so I can get you access to the Audible version of it as well. And Mary Frances has my contact info, so she can get that to you.
Please.
So in closing, I just want to say thank you all for your attention, for your engagement. Again, I really appreciate being invited to speak at your conference. And I'm so appreciative of the work that each and every one of you do every day. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.